Hi, everyone, and welcome to our Coping with Crisis. And this is going to be part two of our series on anger. And we're going to be looking at the root causes of anger and where it comes from, how it's buried deep in the soul many times. And last week, we talked about anger as far as it being centered on injustice. That's where really a lot of anger comes from, whether that's real or perceived. And perceived could be true or not. And so some people have anger over perceived injustices, and some people have anger over real injustices. So, but both cause anger. And anyway, we're going to talk a little bit about the root of all of this. Where does this come from? Today's episode. But again, we put these episodes together. This is kind of a online counseling type of series. It's not necessarily, exegeting a text. It's not necessarily talking about current events. It's talking about issues that people deal with and how to handle them from a biblical perspective. It would be like the same thing if you sat down with me and we had a counseling session and you came to me and said, I have a problem with anger. So this is what this series is about. So we did it in reaction to, obviously, the coronavirus crisis that people were having to deal with, but the principles are the same. No matter what problem or crisis you're handling, the biblical principles apply to everything. And so that's kind of what we're doing here. So anger was incited by us being shut down, our economy shut down by this coronavirus, and people lost people in all of this, and so it incited a lot of anger in them. And a lot of people are now angry, rightfully so, towards governors who are very draconian. They're angry about having their rights taken away. And so, there's a lot of anger and a lot of tension going on in a lot of folks. But anyway, we wanna go to the root of it, because yes, it's okay to be angry, and it says be angry and not sin in the scripture. So there's times where you have the right to be angry, and that's okay. Anger is actually a gift from God that gives you the fuel to do something to protect, to preserve, to stop injustice or whatnot. So it's actually a good motivator in getting you to stop injustice. But when you see anger taking control of an individual, and maybe it's yourself, to where something just sets you off, and instead of being at level one or two, you go to the nth degree. And you don't know why, but it just sets you off to where you get almost out of control. Well, that's something inside of you that's more than just the frustration or irritation that's going on around you currently. And what you're looking for is patterns of this. The patterns in your life will tell you, that, wait a second, you are struggling with anger. This is not just you being angry at, some globalist agenda or something like that, or, someone cut you off on the road. There's something underlying that's causing kind of a fiery coal inside of you that's always lit. And all someone has to do is touch it and throw gasoline on it by triggering you, and then you go crazy. You lose it. That's what we're talking about. Another caveat I want to make before we go into this is that when you see anger from yourself or a person all of a sudden, and it's not part of the normal pattern of how they behave, you might want to take a step back and realize maybe there's something else causing it that's not necessarily spiritually related or coming from injustice and them being angry about it. It could mean that they're on drugs, or they have clinical depression, or they have some form of mental illness, or they're taking certain medications, or they've had a head injury, or their hormones are out of whack, or they have an illness, or they have some type of, stress on them that's out of the norm. When you see anger coming from those, that's not what we're talking about. That's not a habitual pattern. That's something from the outside affecting them, and it's causing an unusual frustration, anger, whatnot. That's not the problem, because when those things go away, the problem of anger goes away too. So we're talking more of a pattern of a life that's caused typically by, you know, some type of trauma, injustice, emotional, physical, whatever, spiritual trauma that's set up in the person. Anyway, that kind of anger has deep roots in the soul. The writer of Hebrews will talk about having a root of bitterness inside you. And anyway, last time, again, just as a reminder, we talked about destructive behaviors that anger creates in us, like unforgiveness is a big hallmark of it, not being honest with ourselves. People just say, I'm not angry, I'm not angry, I'm not angry. And they're really not being honest with themselves. They are angry. And they're angry over something, but they won't identify it. So they rationalize it, minimize it, or deny it. They become critical of others. They lash out or explode at people. They hurt the ones they love, typically. They hurt innocent bystanders, so to speak. And they obviously lose fellowship with the Lord and others because of their anger. And so there's a lot of consequences that come from having this deep-seated anger. And also, last week, we talked about that anger is triggered either by the things we do or someone affecting us unjustly, or someone that we love is being treated unjustly. So when we see that, that becomes a major trigger. It sometimes can be related to someone, obviously from the outside, that's affecting us or our loved one. But typically, like we talked about last week, we're usually triggered by people who are on the inside of our social network, like our friends and our family. And we feel that they've betrayed us when they treat us this way. We don't care if, you know, some of these politicians who are on the left do bad things to us. We don't like it. It angers us. But it doesn't hurt us as deeply as when someone who's on our inside circle does it to us, like a friend or a family member. That's when we really have a problem. And that's where the majority of pain comes from. When a family member or a friend does something wrong to us, why do we take it so personally? You don't take it personally when Nancy Pelosi or Gavin Newsom or, you know, Chuck Schumer does something politically against us. We don't take it personally, so it doesn't bother us that much. It's when someone we love or supposed to love us and accept us and relate to us and love us unconditionally and care for us does something against us, whether it's real or perceived, okay? That's where it all starts happening in us, and it ignites this out-of-control flame of anger. Well, what happens? What happens? So where is the root at? Where do these hurts and pains come from? Well, the overarching idea is injustice, okay? Got that? And typically it's from loved ones, okay? So we got that under our belts, okay? So let's get to the heart and the root of where this is centered on. First, when injustice happens to us by someone we love, our hearts get a stake driven through it. It's like someone stabbed you in your soul with a knife, and it went right to your heart. It is a very painful thing when someone we love betrays us. We want, obviously, unconditional love, and we need it. But when someone we love and who is supposed to love us unconditionally doesn't provide this, either passively or aggressively doesn't provide it, we experience rejection instead of acceptance. That rejection, rather than acceptance, causes major anger. So the result is that we tend eventually to use this anger in life to try to scare people or manipulate people to get people to not reject us or abandon us. Okay? So for instance, you know, someone might, in a marriage, threaten to leave them, threaten to divorce them in order to scare them. So they use their anger as a threatening device to manipulate people or to scare them not to abandon them, not to reject them. And so that's when you know there's something deep down about your anger that centers in on rejection. So you got to think back into your past. Did you feel, whether it's real or perceived, that your parents rejected you? If that's the case, then you're going to have a root of bitterness about that rejection. And so in your daily life, when someone triggers you by perceived or real rejection, currently, it ignites that fire in you. And you go back to where your arrested development happened in your life, of when you were rejected. Say you got rejected early on in your life. Say, I don't know, you're 12 years old or something like that. Your parents divorced and you felt that one of your parents rejected you, or both of them rejected you. Well, it'll send you back to being 12 years old when someone currently rejects you. And that's where your anger is going to come from. It's going to come from an arrested development and an arrested emotional development, because you've really never dealt with that. You never really processed that in a biblical way. I'll talk more about that, how to process this in a biblical way, but I just want to point out the root of where a lot of our anger lies. What's the truth, though, about this particular issue about rejection? Well, the truth that you have to keep telling yourself is that we live in a fallen world, and that the fall has affected everyone, and everyone has a sin nature, as you know. Even the people who love you have a sin nature. And if that sin nature is not mastered, that sin nature will control your loved one, your family, your friends. Because if they are not mature believers, if they don't have the tools available to them, because maybe they're not a believer, in order to handle, you know, life and manage life, then they're inevitably going to hurt you, because the sin nature hurts people. The sin nature will take that person to either attack you or fail to do what the person's duty is. You can have it both ways, passively or actively. It's one of the two. That's what the sin nature will do. So neglect or punishment, okay? So how do I process that? Well, we should expect those that are around us to sin against us. That's normal to think that way. It's not normal to think no one's going to sin against us, especially our loved ones. That's not normal to think like that. You should accept the reality that every person has a sin nature and will hurt you at some point in their life. Okay? But the caveat is that when they do this to you, reject you or whatever, perceived or real, most of the time it's perceived rejection, you then personalize it. And you think, well, they're rejecting me because there's some flaw in me. There's something I don't live up to. There's something that I just can't do to get their approval and acceptance. So I fail. And so there's something bad about me. There's something messed up inside of me. There's something wrong. You may not even know what it is, but you just will say this to yourself in your subconscious, and you then personalize it. Well, they reject me because I'm not smart enough. They reject me because I'm not pretty enough. They reject me because I'm not handsome enough. They reject me because I'm not athletic enough. They reject me because I don't have the right personality. They reject me because whatever. And the list goes on and on and on. That means you're personalizing it. But how do you to view people's sin? Are you to personalize it when someone sins against you? Are you to sit there and say, they're sinning against me because something's wrong with me? That's wrong. That's not biblical. The reason people sin against you is because they have a sin nature. It has nothing typically to do with you. Well, it might relate to you, but they're attacking you or neglecting you because of their selfishness, because of their unrighteousness, because of their issues, because of their perceived needs not being met or whatever. It has really nothing to do with you per se. You just become the scapegoat. You just are the innocent bystander that gets hit by the drunk driver. You're not the one in the car drunk. You're crossing the street. So you have to view people, whether it's your parents, family, friends, loved ones, whatever, that if they rejected you, it wasn't because of you, it's because of their own sin. Maybe they like a certain personality type. Well, that's a sin because you're supposed to like all personality types, per se. You're supposed to be able to adapt to all personality types. Or maybe they didn't like that you weren't athletic enough. Well, where does that standard come from, the Bible? No. So they're using the wrong standard on you. So that's their own issue, right? Or maybe they say, well, you're not smart enough like your sister or your brother, you know, and your brother or sisters are like, you know, 4.0. Well, maybe God didn't gift you in that area, but you can do other things better than other people. And so what does the bit scripture say? It says somebody gave 5 talents, somebody gave 2, and somebody gave 1. At the end of the day, each of us have a different gift, and we are not made in the same mold. And so for parents or whatever to expect you to fit into a standard or mold, you know, that's wrong. You're created in the image of God, and you're gifted a certain way according to your ability, and you're unique. And parents should do that. But if they didn't do it, that's on them. That's not on you. So again, it's whether the rejection was real. Maybe they did reject you flat out for something you didn't live up to, or it's perceived. It doesn't matter. That's wrong for you to interpret that way. The Bible says you're fearfully and wonderfully made. If that's true, then the only standard you need to be a part of or under the rubric of is the standard of the Messiah. We are to live according to the ways Messiah wants to live and use his standards to evaluate our life. And by the way, what is the standard that God uses for the goal of our life? It's not that we become millionaires. It's not because we become successful. It's not because we invent something. It's not because of we're athletic or smart or talented or whatever. You know what the goal in life for us from God is? Be conformed to the image of Christ. End of story, period. That's it. That's the only standard you have to maintain, is how are you doing in being an image bearer of the Messiah. That's it. That's the standard we go by. But yet most people, even Christians, live by an alternative standard set by their parents or their family of origin or something they set or a coach set or a teacher set or society set or a culture set. And that's all wrong. But because they don't live up to the standard, they become angry and they feel rejected. And there is the problem right there, where a lot of anger is centered in on. And so when anyone rejects them now, forget it, man. It's like throwing gasoline on that burning coal inside of them. The second thing I want to bring to your attention, where the root is about anger and injustice, is that our God-given rights or our loved ones' rights were violated by someone, or stomped on by someone, or bulldozed by someone. And this is where a lot of the bitterness and anger comes from. Again, it centers on an injustice, whether it's real or perceived, but we feel that our rights were violated or our loved ones' rights were violated. Okay, so for instance, because we're made in the image of God and because the law of God is written on our hearts, we all have a sense of morality. We know what's right and wrong. We know what's fair and what isn't. We know what justice is and what injustice is because it's already inscribed on our hearts. We intuitively know this. We may not know all the standards of God, but we do know those. These eternal laws of God, okay? So, what happens there? We feel as if somebody has done us wrong and they need to pay. Or they've done one of our family members wrong and they need to pay for doing that. Well, I can tell you what's going to result if that's the root. The result will be you will use anger to make people feel guilty or indebted to you for making you the victim. Since we feel that we're the victim in this, that makes them the oppressor, and therefore this is a classic Marxist technique that they do: victim versus oppressor, oppressed versus oppressed, oppressor. And so we actually do this in our own personal lives. Okay, so someone did some injustice to you, whether it's real or perceived, or to your family member. Okay, then I'm going to play the victim for the rest of life and blame them for what they did to me and make them feel guilty, make them indebted to me, and I will use the guilt and the feeling of indebted to me to manipulate them through my anger. Okay? So sometimes anger is you don't see the rage in there, but it's more passive aggressive. This is more of the passive aggressive type, to make people feel guilty. That's anger, actually, or indebted to you. Okay? And so when you see someone doing that, or if you're doing it, it means that this happened to you. This is your root. This is what's going on inside of you. So what's the truth about this area? The truth is, first of all, we have to figure out whether the rights we think are violated, we have to figure out if those rights stem from the Bible or if those are perceived rights we think we have. Okay? And those perceived rights don't necessarily come from the Bible. It's what comes into our own framework of thinking about how life should be. So we've got to be very careful, and you have to discern, is this a real right from the Bible, or is this one I made up? Okay. Second, understand that as a believer, we are called doulos. And a doulos is a bond slave to God, which means that in the ancient world, slaves had no rights. Okay? If God allows, and you have to think through this theologically, our rights to be violated, then you have to understand what the truth is behind that. There's no doubt many people have had their rights violated, okay? Biblical rights. You know, growing up, they might have been raped or molested, that's a clear case of true rights being violated, or they weren't given the nurturing by their parents, or parents neglected them or abandoned them. You know, every child deserves to be nurtured by parents, right? Okay. That's real. And then there's obviously perceived. Okay, but at the same time, if they are real, and something real did happen, no doubt about it, and it's not something of a figment of their imagination, why does God allow our rights to be violated by other people? So you have to come to the center of that and understand theologically why that happens. Because if you go through life thinking that you have your rights, which is true, but they can never be violated, then you're living in a fantasy world. It's not the world we live in, because you must understand this. The liability of living in this world as a free creature with free will means that in that freedom will come bad things. Okay? God designed this world to give the best possible world available to have a love relationship with his creatures called humans. Okay? And to do that, you had to have a world where the possibility of sin or rejection exists. Otherwise, it wouldn't be free will. So the highest value is love, a love relationship with the Creator. In order to have a love relationship, you have to have freedom. Otherwise, you're just a robot. So God gives every human being free will to obey him, not obey him, to believe in him, to not believe in him. Okay, that's the essence of a true love relationship. You have to have freedom in every relationship. And so God doesn't stick a gun to our head and say, love me. Okay, because that exists in this world, and because the world is designed like that, The liability is evil. The liability is sin, missing the mark. And hence, yes, you do have your rights, but because of the free will of creatures that possess a sin nature, they actually will violate your rights many times. And hence, that is why the issue of forgiveness is such a big deal. You have your rights violated, and what are you supposed to do? Seek vengeance? No. You are to forgive. So God does allow our rights to be violated because of free will. And that's the answer, the theological answer to that. There is no other deeper thing you can go to. Why does he allow bad things to happen to good people, so to speak? Because of free will. Because of free will. That's the answer. And anyway, even bad people have free will, right? So if you understand that from a theological standpoint, then you can accept the reality that we live in is that, yes, your rights will be violated your whole life. That's normal because of the world we live in. Now, in the future, it won't happen like that. In heaven or the Messianic Kingdom, we won't have our rights violated. Everything will be just and fair and righteous. And so we don't have to worry about that. But in this world, you can't have that. There's no way you could have a free creature not be able to rebel and hurt his brother, hurt his mom or dad or his child or whatever. So at the end of the day, the way we relate to God in all of this is that he is our master. He is the one who tells us what our rights are, not us. We don't make things up. He tells us what our rights are. And he is the one where everything has to pass through him. If he allowed the free will of these creatures to hurt you, then that's part of his plan. Again, not that he decreed it or said, I'm going to do this to this person. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying he allowed this to happen in your life as part of the free will of other creatures. But what God can do is he can turn it to your benefit. That's the idea. And that's, you know, the Romans 8 principle. But anyway, I want you to see an example from the Apostle Paul about his rights, okay? And he said this in Philippians chapter 4. It's a very famous passage, but he's talking about his rights. He's talking about how he's learned to not have rights and sometimes have them and live in sometimes in a good state or live in a bad state. He said this in verse 11, not that I speak in regard to need, for I have learned in whatever state I am to be content. I know how to be abased, and I know how to abound. Everywhere and in all things I have learned both to be full and to be hungry, both to abound and suffer need. I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. Now the idea is this. Paul lived in the Roman world. He had very little rights, even as a Roman citizen. And he had less rights than you and I do here in America, no doubt about that. But Paul learned how to be content even when his rights were taken away. This is a prison epistle. He's writing this from prison. He had no rights in prison, right? And so he's learned to be abased, and he's learned to go without. He's learned to be hungry. And so all these rights we think we have, Paul was willing to give them up if the master, guided him eventually, or allowed him, I should say, to be arrested and put in prison. Paul's greatest work really was done in prison with the prison epistles. But nonetheless, again, it's about not worrying so much about your rights, but just using whatever state you have for the master's benefit. So the mindset of a doulos is this. They go strictly by what the master allows. If God allows something to come in your life, they say, your will, master. If God takes something away, the doulos says, your will, master. The doulos does not have a will of his own. He only obeys his master's will. That's the idea. And so at the end of the day, you can get mad about all your rights being violated, and some of them are legitimate, no doubt about it. But if you continue to center in on the injustice of your rights being violated, you will forever be stuck. Forever stuck. You have to approach that as a due loss and say, Lord, somehow this happened to me. You're going to make good out of this. I know you will, because you said you would in Romans 8. And I have to trust you. I can't go back in time and change things. I can't right now enforce a penalty on these people who violated me. It is what it is. And so I'm a due loss. I have actually no rights. I submit my rights to you, Father. That's how to approach that theologically. The third route that a lot of people have is they have a plan for their lives and what they think should happen, and that plan gives them a sense of security. But then things happen in their life and their plans get disrupted by other people. Okay? That's usually how it goes. Or just by the fall in general. And basically, this causes a lot of anger in folks when their plans get disrupted. And so, you know, currently, if they have this coal of fire in them about this particular area, when someone's actions, like currently, endangers what they have mapped out for their lives and their plans for maybe their children or whatnot, that they feel that their destiny and their plans, the destiny of their kids or their loved ones, is in jeopardy, and they will fight over that. They will be so angry, they will go on the rampage. Have you ever seen these parents at these ball games, and they're just going crazy over a bad call from an umpire, or a bad, you know, something happens on the field that was unjust? Have you ever seen that? I mean, I've been in the stands and people are just cussing at the umpires from the stands, and they can't control themselves. Why is that? Because they have a plan. Whether that plan is for them or maybe their kid on the ball field, maybe in their mindset, in their thinking, and a lot of parents are out of touch in reality with their own kids. They have a 10-year-old playing in a Little League game, but in the back of that parent's mind, his plan for that child is to be a major leaguer one day. And you say, I can't believe people would think like that. I can, because I see it. They do think like that. They have a plan that their kid's going to be a professional football player at 10 years old, or baseball player, basketball, golfer, whatever. And it's like delusions of grandeur, okay? But why? They have a plan. So when they have their kid get a bad call on them in whatever sport, they go crazy. Do you know why? Because someone is threatening the plan of success. Someone is getting in the way, whether it's the umpire, whether it's the coach, whatever, someone is stepping in the way of the plan for the child. And again, it could be the parent's plan, living vicariously through the child. But I'm going to tell you this. This is a major problem of people's anger in the United States. At least, this is, I would call this a first world problem. So if you're in the first world, and you have the ability to dream big for your children or dream big for yourself, he's going to be the next Tiger Woods, or he's going to be the next Tom Brady. He's going to be the next, you know, Mike Trout, or whatever it is. They have delusions of grandeur, and they're going to make sure that kid does that. And you better not get in the way of that. That's when you see that someone's root is their planning. They have a destiny they think they have. And that, folks, can cause a lot of anger. So the result is they will use their anger to control others and try to overpower them to ensure their plans don't get messed up. So, for instance, just use the analogy. The crazy parent in the stands that's cussing the air blue at the ump for missing a called strike or a ball or whatever, and they call the wrong thing on their kid, and then that parent turns and cusses out the umpire. They're using anger to overpower or control that person. That's what's really happening because of their plans have been messed up. And so what's the truth in all of this? What's the biblical truth about our plans? Well, I can tell you this. Whatever you have planned for your life, probably not going to happen. It's probably delusions of grandeur of you not thinking in reality. And I don't mean to step on anyone's dreams or plans, but at the end of the day, I know what the Bible says. We are to submit our plans to God and see whether or not our plans are according to His plans and His will. Because if they're not, you're off target. I was off target. A lot of people are off target. They have this mindset of what's going to happen to them. And then they get to middle age and their plans didn't go. And then they have this middle age crisis, so to speak, where they don't have a grip on reality because nothing they planned happened. And for the foreseeable future, nothing's really going to change. They're not going to be the millionaire they thought they were going to be. They're not going to be the inventor they thought. They're not going to be the pro golfer. They're not going to be this or that. And again, I'm not trying to squash anyone's plans or have, an incentive and motivation to do well in life. But what we find out in James chapter 4, verses 13 through 15, it says this: "Come now, you who say, today and tomorrow we will go to such and such a city. Spend a year there, buy and sell, and make a profit." And then it's kind of the idea that, oh, we have these plans, and this is what we're going to do. We got it all mapped out, and this is the game plan, and this. And again, it's not saying not to plan your life. It's saying once you get your plan, and you think you have a good plan, verse 14 comes in. "Whereas you do not know what will happen tomorrow, because you don't know the future, you're arrogant to think that your plans are solid and that nothing can mess them up." So, and then he goes, "For what is your life? It is even a vapor that appears for a little time and then vanishes away." He goes, "You're not even here for very long. What are you thinking? Instead, you ought to say, if the Lord wills, we shall live and do this or that." Did you catch that? You can make plans, but you must submit those plans to the Lord, and He has every right to change them at any point in time. He will redirect you. He will guide you. He will lead you. And what ends up happening? I can tell you what happens with this. God changes their plans because it's not the best plan for them. God knows us better than we know ourselves. He knows what is best for us. He's a good father. And He knows the future. He knows, He has what we call middle knowledge. What that means is God knows all the hypothetical situations He could put us in and how we would react. He knows what would hurt us and what would help us. And so God, as a loving father, is going to put us on a path and a plan of His that does us the best good spiritually. But a lot of people don't like that. A lot of people have a hard time with that because their plans get disrupted, whether by other people, reality, or God Himself, and He redirects you because it's not the best thing for you. And you know what? They not only get mad at people, they get mad at God. "Why did you change my life in the direction I was going? I had a plan, but now this happened and that happened and you allowed this." And so they get really upset with God. They break fellowship with God. They're so mad. And so at the end of the day, the truth is we have to submit our plans before the Lord. If you do not, and you hold on to your plans, you will be a very angry individual, because I can guarantee you, whatever you had planned when you were 19 is not coming to fruition. That was a 19-year-old brain. A 19-year-old brain without a lot of spiritual maturity. And that, look what happened. Now, do some people get to live out dreams? Of course they do, but they're like less than 1%. But there's only one Tiger Woods. There's only one Michael Jordan. There's only one Tom Brady and in the whole world of 7 billion people, okay? And you have to come to grips with that. And at the end of the day, you have to accept the plan God has for you. And that acceptance takes away the anger. So we're going to stop there for this session. We're going to continue this next time, and we're going to look at the fourth and fifth roots of anger and dive into those a little bit more in depth, and we'll further go on to extrapolate how to get out of this, how to move through this, to process all of this. But first of all, you have to identify, obviously, where the roots are, because you have to get those out. So identification of the root becomes a major deal in getting anger out of you. So we'll continue this conversation next time. And again, we thank you for joining us. And usually we do one of these once a week. So look on our website once a week. If you want, a great thing would be to subscribe and click the little bell there. And that will alert you to when we upload these. That would really help you guys out in that regard. So anyway, God bless you. We'll see you next time as we continue to explore the topic of anger.